The NFL Draft. News on number 4. Draft coverage. Live, local, late breaking.
All right, well, as if there's not enough going on this week with the Coyotes, and obviously the Diamondbacks playing, getting their season going, and oh yeah, the Suns start their playoff series with Minnesota on Saturday. Wolf, the NFL Draft now is officially 1 week away.
And this is my favorite time of the offseason, of course, the week before the NFL Draft. Here it is.
Why is it your favorite?
Well, it's just because you can't believe anything that a general manager says at this point in time. You can't believe any story that you actually hear at this point in time. It is official. We are 1 week away from the NFL Draft, 1 week away from the first round. Let the draft subterfuge begin.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, to be fair, it probably began a while ago, but it kicks into a whole nother level right now. Any last lie you can plant out there, this is the time to do it. If you think you can somehow push another GM or another team off the track of a player you want, this is your chance to leak something to a media member.
And you're so right about that, Luke, because once again, now, if you're a general manager, you could just tell the truth. And nobody'd believe you. Nobody. I mean, even if you did,
that's a great point.
You just would be like, knock it off.
So Monty Austin Fort and Jonathan Gannon have a live press conference. We'll carry it live at noon. Okay, so we'll do it live at noon. If Monty Austin Fort sat down and they were like, okay, you know, your thoughts on number 4 pick. If he looked right into the camera and said, we're taking Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4, everybody would be like, so they're not taking Marvin Harrison Jr.
Everybody'd laugh. Exactly.
That's right.
That's so funny.
He could know what he's doing, sit down and tell everybody, and we'd all speculate he must be talking about something else.
Yes. And once again, too, I think general managers, they use disinformation. And you have to remember, based on our needs, there is misinformation, which it's just wrong. And then there's disinformation, which is the wanton, willful desire to actually mislead. It's called disinformation. You're trying to actually mislead or get people off of your path, so to speak.
It's not somebody from Jersey being like, hey, look at this information I got right here.
No.
It's different.
Hey, this. You're going to do this?
Read this information.
Hey, did you
right
do
here.
This?
Daniel Jeremiah said, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, this is a pretty big draft for the Arizona Cardinals.
I think they're in a prime position to be able to get out at 4 if they want to. And come back up and still get, you know, one of those top 3 receivers. So, you know, if they think those guys are close and who knows what order they have them in, I think that order changes around the league. I think they can get one of those guys, which is a top 5 player, while also collecting a little something extra. And it's a way for them to add impact guys at positions of need, while also, you know, continuing to add some more firepower here.
Yeah, that is a great observation right there. To me, what's so awesome about this draft for the Arizona Cardinals is just how deep this draft is in a lot of areas they need.
Yeah.
A lot of positions they need, especially wide receiver. Once again, to have 3 guys that I think you could safely put on a tier all by themselves, 3 guys, and say, hey, if you get one of these 3 guys, you're going to be doing really, really well. That really does help Monty Austin Fort in terms of being able to possibly move back and then move back up.
It is amazing because I don't remember a time when people were expecting or saying, hey, watch this GM. He might, like, it's rare enough to say, hey, the Cardinals might trade down, right?
Yes.
But that's not the narrative around the Cardinals. It's, hey, the Cardinals might trade down and back up.
Yes.
Like, that's the bar he set by doing that last year. And obviously this year on paper looks even more conducive to it because you could trade down, add something, and then move up and still get one of those top 3 receivers. But that is much, much easier said than done, especially in real time. It would be a lot more simple to just trade down to 6 with the Giants or something.
Yes. Can I just say this quickly right now, too? Even if the Arizona Cardinals didn't trade Basinonians, even if they didn't, they stayed right there at number 4. If they went ahead and, oh, I don't know, with their first 2 picks in the first round, if they took Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4, Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4, and then at number 27, they took an offensive guard. Yeah, that's what I said. because what they're going to do is build around Kyler Murray and say, Kyler, we believe in you, and watch this. If you don't think that's the case, watch this right now. Give this guy every opportunity. Why would you do that? Because over the last 4 weeks of the season, the Arizona Cardinals were the number one offense in the National Football League. Number one. Yards per game, number one. Okay, and they played some pretty good teams, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, they did.
Now, all of a sudden, can you build it? Hey, you know what? We're going to go all in right now on Kyler Murray. That's what we're going to do. We're going to protect this guy. We're going to give him weapons around him. If you just didn't even trade out, this is why I'm jacked up for what we're going to see a week from now.
Well, I just like the idea of getting rid of as much uncertainty as possible. If you load up the offense around Kyler Murray, you put him in a position to succeed, which is objective number one anyway. You're trying to win, right? But if he can't succeed and you've put the offense around him, then I think maybe you have, you know, something to really consider a year from now. But you putting him in a position to succeed helps everybody. And if he can't, then you're like, okay, maybe we need to, you know, if this is a prove it year, you got to see what he actually proves. But you can't ask him to prove it without any receivers.
Yeah, that's a great point right there.
I don't know what he's
put
proving.
Put that in the audio file, please, will you? Luke Lipinski, once again, bringing magic on the air.
Once a year. This is...
But I just want to say this quickly. It's so true. Once again, stop and think about it. You're going to get him a wide receiver one. Are the Arizona Cardinals, can they set themselves up for the next 5 years? Yeah, I think they could. With a wide receiver one, a true wide receiver one, and then all of a sudden a starting guard in the first round, a starting guard. I know it's not sexy. I understand that. But a guard that could be your starter for the next 5 years.
It's got two first-round picks and then, you know, still four others before 90. Here's another one from Daniel Jeremiah.
This is a set-your-franchise-up situation here for the Arizona Cardinals. The Houston Texans did it last year. If you go back and look at a lot of the Super Bowl teams, you know, you can identify the 1 or 2 year period where their draft set that run up. Seattle's one that comes right to mind, you know, what they did over a couple years. I remember, you know, back when I was in Baltimore in the early 2000s, the Chargers had gone on a good run, and we had talked about it in our meeting room that they had literally back-to-back drafts, just two drafts where they hit on about five guys each, and it set them up to be a really competitive team for a decade. So this is their moment here. So they need to, they need to get some guys who really make a difference for them.
He's right.
Yeah.
The opportunity is there.
And then I'd go at number 35, Edge. I'd go edge at number 35. I'd go corner at 66. I'd go corner at 71. I would.
Two corners.
I'm just telling you right now.
You've got extra picks.
And then I'd go wide receiver at 90. I'm just throwing that out there. You know, generally speaking, once again, you want to set yourself up. These are areas of need for the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
Set yourself up indeed.
All right, enter to win an exclusive NFL draft experience. Just text DRAFT to 620-620 to enter for the chance to win a reserve table and $200 in food and beverage credit at Flanker's Kitchen and Sports Bar inside the BetMGM Sportsbook, all while having a front row seat at our live broadcast as we await the Cardinals' first pick. Again, that's DRAFT to 620-620 right now. When we come back, what does James Jones think about the role Bradley Beal is playing for the Suns right now? You'll hear next. It's Wolf and Luke in Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
The world is a vampire.
Arizona Sports 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app.
Let's go, Suns. Come on.
Wolf and Luke talk Suns Timberwolves now. Hold you up
to the flames. Yeah, we're going to talk Suns Timberwolves, but do you see what's on that TV? I've been quietly watching it, not bringing it up to you to distract you, but they're replaying the Cardinals-Bears game. I believe that is the let-him-off-the-hook game.
Not the Monday Night Football
game. That sure is what it looks like. Because the whole time it's been on during our show, the Cardinals have been up by quite a bit. And I'm pretty sure that was Devin Hester taking a punt back for a touchdown to give the Bears the lead with a couple minutes
left. Do you know during that game I said, the good thing about Edgerrin James is he's not a fumbler, David. And the next play... fumbled the ball.
Oh, boy. I did know that. I wasn't going to bring it up.
Okay. Okay.
But they also just showed Edgerrin James.
My goodness.
He clearly has fumbled earlier in the game because that was a punt that was taken back in the Bears.
Oh, I said that with such conviction, too.
Well, you were right.
You know what's great about this? David Edgerrin James is not a fumbler. Here's a snap. There's a ball. I kid you not. Oh, my goodness.
What was Dave's reaction? Do you remember the look on his face? Like, did he just stare at you like, get out?
I know. I turned to him. Did I just say that? It was stunning. Oh, my goodness.
All part of the process of letting them off the hook.
That's the great thing about having Edger and James, too. The guy's not a fumbler, David.
They're out of the eye with James. And the ball's loose. It's fumbled and picked up by the Bears. Tillman at the 20, the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Chicago.
Did I just say that? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it was a touchdown, too. I forgot. Oh, that took about 3 seconds to blow up in your face.
You know what, too? We ought to do, do we have like a 30 for 30 on this program? Do we call it, Wolf and Luke's eye on something?
Based on how you're asking it, no.
I'm just wondering if we should do our own investigative reporter, investigative reporting. Wouldn't that be kind of cool if we did that?
I think it's cool.
Wolf and Luke's eye guy.
So far today, you've hired a sports psychologist for the show and an investigative reporter.
Right. Yeah. Wolf and Luke's eye guy. Like, we give Rick a microphone.
Okay.
And Rick gets out there on the street and starts doing some hardcore investigative reporting on
that. What is he investigating?
Anything.
Okay.
Anything we...
So there's some holes in this plan. Okay, I see.
No, what do you mean? We come up with, hey, Rick, get out there and find out what's going on.
Go out there. So are we investigating how Wolf somehow created an Edger and James fumble that was returned for a touchdown out of thin
because
air?
Because I would say to Rick right now, go interview Paul Calvisi about Paulie, who was standing there in the shadows of the corner. That's what the sideline guy does, ladies and gentlemen. He's in the shadows of the tunnel, okay? And he's in there and he's standing there, and all of a sudden, oh boy, look at Dennis Green. He's really upset right now, and here he comes. You might want to just talk to Paulie about that story, the inside story about Denny Green.
I'm pretty sure that was Cardinals folktales one day.
Oh, yeah, they've done a folktales on great. That. But yeah, but once again, we've got to get Rick, who is our eye guy, to get Paul on here. We didn't do a folktales, did we?
No.
No, but we
And you
could.
Know, Rick would be good at it, because remember when he asked Caleb Williams about his dad and Lincoln Riley about rolled over?
What if we do that? What if we send Rick out to do investigative things, but they always involve Lincoln Riley? So he just gets more and more angry each time.
We just get Rick out there. Rick will do it. Rick will do anything.
I wasn't there for that one, but I was there for the game. I was in the press conference room. Remember when Derek Anderson was laughing? They caught him on the sideline laughing, and they were getting blown out. I remember being in the press conference room, going into the locker room to do interviews. Everybody seemed fine in the press conference room. Going to the locker room, I came out like 5 minutes later, and everybody was in a horrible mood. It's like, what just happened out here? So anyway.
Yeah, I don't want to go out there and get embarrassed on Monday Night Football in front of everybody.
Yep, that was the one.
Wow. Okay.
As far as the Phoenix Suns.
Boy, we got derailed right there.
We did.
Well,
that's
so fun.
I blame NFL Network for putting this
game. I blame Rick.
Yeah? You don't want to blame Paulie, too? The Phoenix Suns starting that series with Minnesota in about 48 hours, 49 hours. James Jones talking about Bradley Beal, who has really stepped up lately.
Brad found his balance, and he's kind of stabilized a little bit. It's always tough, extremely tough for high usage, extremely talented players to come in and find that kind of swing role, which is the third in usage. Some nights we need you to be number one. Some nights we need you to be number five. It's really, really difficult. But I think as he's gotten healthier, as he's gotten stronger, and as the season's progressed, he's found his balance. And now he's just out there playing, because with very limited time, to get things right at the end of the season. He just got to the point where he's like, it's just time. It's just time for me to go out there and play freely and let my teammates follow my lead.
Yeah, I think the point is accurate. I really do. I think it has meaning. When you think of being a third wheel, have you ever been a third wheel, Bazonians?
There's times I felt like that on this show.
Okay. We'll talk after, Luke, okay? Yeah. But yet at the same time, the third wheel. It's been around forever, an idiom that's been around forever. Of course, why? Because it's true. Think about it. There is such a thing as a third wheel.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you go out and get Bradley Beal. We got the big three, everybody.
Beal the wheel.
It's not just, yes. Okay, that was good right there. It's not just Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. Now we got Bradley Beal. What are you going to do about that, man? Oh, by the way, Brad, you are the third wheel.
Yeah, sorry, Brad.
It's going to take a little bit. We all have experienced that. We know that it's going to take a little bit to actually watch Bradley Beal find himself. Have we? Over the last two games, games 81 and 82, have we seen Bradley Beal and how he's going to fit in for the rest of the way?
And honestly, you could make a case. You could go back a couple weeks. It feels like maybe not every single game, but I would say more often than not over the last 3 or 4 weeks, it feels like it's different with Bradley Beal.
It does feel different.
And that, I think, is probably the most encouraging thing going into these playoffs. Like, yeah, okay, the 3-0 against Minnesota, it's as good of a matchup as you could hope for in the first round in the Western Conference, but that doesn't really do anything for you big picture in these playoffs. If you're still looking for a way, like, hey, maybe this team could go on a deep run. They were built to win a championship. If you still hold out hope for that, then you are looking no further than Bradley Beal right now, because he has been a difference maker. I'm distracted because they're showing Fan Appreciation Night on ESPN. And anytime they show the Coyotes on ESPN, it's always some sort of like emotional moment. They're not just showing the Coyotes beating Edmonton last night. You know what I mean?
Especially when you've got a 4-year-old kid who's got a hat on and holding the sign up against the glass.
Did you see the picture? There were so many kids like that holding up the sign of like, don't leave. And it was all, man, that was very emotional. But there was the one kid who had a shirt that him and his dad had made. The front said, "My first Coyotes game." And then on the back said, "And also my last Coyotes game." And as miserable as we all were, I thought that was kind of funny the way he did that.
Yeah.
All right. We text us your thoughts to the FanDuel text line. It's 620 right now. When we come back, Todd Walsh will join us. How is he feeling after that game and that just whole experience? And, you know, like after the last couple decades plus with the Coyotes in the Valley, we'll talk to him next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Welcome back to the show. It is Wolf and Luke on a Thursday morning. It's really just a Wednesday night running into a Thursday morning for some of us, and that might very well be the case for our next guest, too. Todd Walsh, Arizona Coyotes broadcaster, man, joins us right now on the Arizona Sports Line. It just hit me. I don't even know if I can introduce him as Arizona Coyotes broadcaster after today.
Toddy.
Walsh, what's going on, man?
Wow. Thanks for that one. That was like Gillette aftershave. Just splash it on. Holy cow. All right.
Okay, hi. Toddy. You know, first hey, things, how you doing, man?
Well, first of all, it's good to hear your voices, both of you. You know how much I love you both and appreciate what you do. And you always honor me by chatting. But I'm okay. I'm numb. All the you know, waves that you get after things like this are certainly happening, and I'm just grateful that we had a chance to do what we did last night. Luke, I'm sure you feel the same way. I mean, the outcome was horrific, but to still be standing there as the ship was sinking, you know, we ran it right into the ground. I mean, but I was honored to be there, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. If it was going to happen, I wanted to be there to say goodbye.
Yeah, I think you just said it right there. I mean, for me, I'm very clearly in the denial, making jokes because I know I'm miserable stage right now. But
well, that's your life, though. Come on,
that's
man.
True. Well, now it is. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It feels like it's hitting me differently every hour. But I think you just hit on it. I at least feel like we sent them off with, you know, the broadcast, the fans, the team itself, the best way possible. How are you processing this, or are you yet? Because I'm not even sure I am, honestly.
I'm not, and the way it all sort of raced to the finish line while we were out on that long road trip made it even harder, I think, because we had to deal with it a certain way as employees of the team, and that's our broadcast, you know, reality at that moment. And the uncertainty of it all. And I was just kind of trying to hold on, especially the fact that it broke while we were in Canada. It was so, so frustrating and so difficult because of the agenda and the posturing and all the things that go with the Canadian hockey media. Not all of them, but some of them. And I was kind of forced to, act a certain way. And I, you know, I was kind of in protect mode and couldn't say what I was really thinking and what I really sort of knew. So I kind of had to navigate that. And those were rough waters. And I will never forget, and I've said it to him to his face probably far too many times now, but how Andre Tourigny handled the whole thing on the air, in front of the media, behind the bench, and way behind the scenes. I saw most of it, if not all of it, a good portion of it. And he was the rudder of a rudderless ship. And so I was processing that, and then all of a sudden we land, and then Wednesday was coming. And I guess it was Wednesday. I think that was yesterday. And so I'm still... I don't know. I knew it felt like I was at a wake. It felt like I had to speak at a wake. And I've done that far too many times in my life. And I swore I would never do it again. And I did it again. And the problem is when you do that, you don't really mourn properly. I learned that the hard way, and that's the truth. And I got to figure out how to mourn what just happened, because it is so deeply personal and professional. So I don't know if I answered the question, but that's where I am at this second.
You answered it.
Yeah, Todd, okay. You know, I was talking to Luke earlier, and I use this analogy a lot. I use the funnel. You know, there's a lot of stuff in the top of the funnel. What's coming out of the bottom of the funnel?
Yep.
What's coming out of the bottom of the funnel for you?
Well, I said this earlier this morning with Dan and Vince. The one thing that struck me last night was the interpersonal relationships and exchanges that I had. I know I wasn't alone. I saw it happening literally all around me all night. But it was sort of how you would lock eyes with someone and maybe you hadn't seen them in a while, but they were very familiar and comfortable relationships that centered around hockey or broadcasting or both. And it went from the eye lock to all of a sudden the handshake. And the handshake was a little bit firmer than the normal, and then there was the embrace, and then you would whisper. You just whisper to them, or they would whisper to you, this didn't have to happen this way. And that's the bottom part of the funnel for me right now, is there. I didn't want to be angry last night. I wanted to be thoughtful, and I wanted to be respectful, and I wanted to have empathy, and especially to Winnipeg, believe it or not, because I lived the other side of that so closely. And two different moments in time. And I learned so much about myself, and I learned about that pain up there, and I learned about the joy of having hockey come back, and I wanted to remember that. So that's the part of the funnel now that I'm trying to sift away and go to another funnel and probably another funnel. But I'm getting angry again. But at the same point, you can't control it. And that was Andre's message. And that was Bill Armstrong's message to the team. Control what you can control. And that's a life lesson. That's why we follow coaches into the wall. Ron, I know you know that.
Yep.
And Luke, I know you know that. And I'm kind of taking that lead. But that's where my head's at right now.
Yeah.
I don't know what the future holds. I can't answer any questions about the NHL in Phoenix, Arizona at some point. I'm just kind of living this moment right now.
You're saying a lot of things that you're verbalizing what I've been feeling for the last few days, certainly, Walsh, all the way down to that, just how personal it is. It almost feels like college just ended, but like abruptly, and it wasn't supposed to, and everybody's going their separate ways under bad terms, not under graduation, and putting the anger aside. That's funny you say that, because I want to make sure I don't treat Salt Lake City the way Winnipeg and Quebec and some of those cities treated Coyotes fans for years and years. Answer me this. Did that third period not go by as like the fastest third period of the season? There wasn't even a commercial break till there was like 7 minutes left.
No, it was amazing. I mean, it was, first of all, I just want to say something. You just gave me chills throughout my entire body. Before you guys called, I knew you were going to call, obviously, and I was thinking about this feeling that I had, and it did feel like the end of school. I literally thought that, but there was this tragic aspect to it, and I couldn't figure out, but that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
Yes, that game flew by like the wind, and I think we even missed a commercial break. I'm not sure how that played out, but that tells you how fast it was. And the other part of it, I just didn't want it to end. And then inevitably, as a broadcaster, I knew that that meant that we were coming to our end, and I was acutely aware of that. And, you know, it was weird because I had my back to the rink. I had to look into the camera while everything was happening behind me after the game. And as much as I understand my job, I wish I could have turned around and just soaked it up. I'm going to watch it later at some point in my life. Probably not today, but yeah, man, it was. Man, I thought we were all going to turn into pumpkins at some point at the end, but I didn't want to leave the building, man. I didn't want to walk out.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. You did an incredible job last night, Walshy. I know how much that sucked because outside the building, I was trying to do the same thing, and I also couldn't see. Actually, I snuck back in for the end of the game and almost missed my interview. But what you're saying, it all rings very true to me. But you did an outstanding job last night, man. You always do, and at least you sent them out the right way.
Well, listen, Luke, first of all, I appreciate that, but I hope you know how I feel about you. And Ron, give me a second, because your partner here is truly one of the best in the business and is such a unique and special talent. And I am amazed and blown away and so thankful that I had a chance to work with you, Luke. We never really did get to be on the air together, maybe for minutes at a time, but I always felt like we were kindred spirits. But I honor you, the way you go about your business, and I know how you love the game. That was my message at the end of the night. That I learned so long ago, if the game's good to you, or if you're good to the game's going to be good to you. And I know how you feel about this game, and it shows in everything that you do with it. And you should be proud of that. And the future's right there in front of you, and you're going to thrive and prosper. And I'm just going to say to myself, it was cool to have watched you do what you did. And I'm very, very thankful for that.
Well, Todd, I appreciate that. I would not be where I am without you and then a few other very important people there that were there last night that I got to see most of them, but you're right there at the top of the list, man. So thank you for everything.
And Toddy, well, I'm going to give you a call after the show too. Okay. So just be expecting.
Please
that.
Do. And yeah, if you don't play Leash at some point on the radio, I'm going to really have a hard time with it. So just,
okay.
Are you guys taking requests? Is it the all requests are yet?
As a matter of fact, yes.
Leash. Okay, Leash.
But okay, sounds good.
We'll get that on there. All right. Todd, thank you as always, man.
Love you, buddy.
Take care.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Okay, man.
That's Todd Walsh joining us right there on the Arizona Sports Line, as he so often does. Summarizing last night pretty well. There was stuff he was saying right there where I was like, yeah, that's what I've been feeling. I'm glad he just said that because I hadn't.
That's
totally
why he loves Pearl Jam is because he's so verbal. He's verbally intensive, man.
Verbally intensive sounds like
great
a Pearl
lyricist.
Jam album. All right, we come back over to baseball about 20 games in. Can we officially say this might be a disappointing start for the D-backs? That's next. It's Wolf and Luke in Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Vince Murata. Join us on Friday morning and we'll explore the question, did the D-backs indeed pick the ball up in San Francisco? That and more starting at 6 on Arizona Sports.
We could all use a little system up and down today, right? Wolf, I feel like you could use it just as much as those of us that were at the game last night.
Pick it up.
A good alarm on your phone. I know I've said that before, but it's like they almost designed this for an alarm commercial.
Wake up. And then they killed it. And they started doing this.
But he started with wake up. The next song that Wolf releases, you have to do it in that system of a down voice right there. I don't care who it's about. If it's about Mike Hazen or Michael Porter Jr. or any of these guys.
That's Michael Porter Jr.
Are you going to have a song for somebody on the T-Wolves since that's who the Suns are playing?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's time for me to break that back out.
Okay.
I mean, as you know right now, the Freak Show is going to be on display for next week, of course, the Freak Show, ladies and gentlemen. It's a tradition. I've done it many, many times. This is the weekend I write that stuff.
Yes.
So I'll be writing indeed.
So how many are there going to be next week? Four?
Four.
Yeah.
There's always four freaks.
Four
one
freaks.
For each day leading up.
And Aaron has all the previous freaks listed somewhere.
Yeah, she does.
An archive of freaks.
And by the way, Mal, too, I need you to give me the titles of those, if that's possible. Do we have any of that?
I like all of a sudden couldn't hear myself in my headphones. So you mean I need to like tell you that experience. Isaiah Simmons was Lizard King?
Right.
Oh,
right.
So you need me to go through all throughout the years back from 2015 and tell you what you nicknamed everybody.
Well, wait a minute.
While you're at it, can you hire an investigative reporter and a sports psychologist? List of those.
Well, yeah, I have the list of their real names.
She has to go
like I know
to
Eric Armstead and Bud Dupree and Tyler Lockett and Anthony Richardson.
You don't have to do that.
Oh, no, no worries. No worries, Wolf. Mel,
I would
I got
never
you.
Ask that's, you to do it.
That's why you
ever.
Couldn't hear yourself, because you were blacking out for a second with rage as Wolf handed out his third job of the
I
show
would
today.
Never, I thought you had a list of okay, that and that was my
well, I do have a list.
Well, I know,
of their
but
names.
Not the nickname that I used. Because I guarantee you, how many years is
wait, wasn't
this
Isaiah
now?
Simmons the chameleon?
Yes, Isaiah Simmons was.
This is how you should tell him. You should. We should do a segment where you say the nickname and you give him multiple choice, and he has to see if he remembers.
Oh no! Let's not do that.
Do
and say that I did.
No, I think that'd be a lot
okay,
of fun for
we'll
me.
Do it off air, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I think we should do that on air.
Yeah. I'm sure, Luke. You're so funny.
I know. I'm really enjoying this now. We got the Monty Austin Ford, Jonathan Gannon press conference coming up here shortly. So real quickly with the Diamondbacks, you brought this up in the pregame show, Wolf, and it's a real interesting thought, honestly. Yeah, it's early, 19 games in. No, the Diamondbacks aren't bad, but the way you said it was like, can we kind of just agree that this is a disappointing start for what we expected?
Yeah, I mean, it really is, right? And I know the injuries are, oh my goodness, Eduardo Rodriguez, Geraldo Perdomo, Alec Thomas, Paul Sewald. We're talking about guys that are integral to the Diamondbacks and the future of the Diamondbacks and their success. So,
did you say Eduardo Rodriguez in there too? Did I miss that one?
I did. I started with him. Eduardo Rodriguez, E-Rod.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, once again, but even with those setbacks, which are legit, and I can't say people say this all the time. Oh, you're using that as an excuse. Will you stop it? I'm not using it as an excuse. It's a reason.
Yeah.
I mean, what? You don't think these guys have tangible impact on the Diamondbacks winning games? Those four guys in particular?
I thought Hazen said that pretty well. He verbalized it really well when he was on with us yesterday. He's like, look, I'm not, he said, it's not an excuse, period, stop.
Correct.
But I need to be aware of the reality, basically, of what I'm dealing with, too.
Absolutely.
And that's,
have we built a faulty premise for the season here or not?
Or is everybody just hurt?
Or is everybody just banged up right now? Now, listen, could they have played better? Yes. The Diamondbacks, the biggest disappointment I have, and I think you've already talked about it, Luke, but the biggest disappointment I have is the fact that their defense has not been what I thought it was going to be through the first 19 games of the season.
Jody Jackson just said that in the first hour of the show. Like, yes, we get that these guys are all good fielders, but you do still have to make the plays. And that's, you know, That's it right there. They made 56 errors last year as a team, Wolf. They're on pace for 128 this year.
Oh, my goodness.
That's
stunning.
Not even close. That's not like we're freaking out like, hey, they made 56 errors last year, and this year they're on pace for 61. No, they're on pace for 128 right now.
A different way of saying it. I wrote this down. They're number 26 in fielding percentage. 26, okay? And they've already committed more errors there's only three teams that have committed more errors than the Diamondbacks. Three in the league. That, never in a million years after 19 games that I expect the Diamondbacks to be down that list.
No, and I don't have the list in front of me right now, but I think one of those teams is the A's. You don't want to be on a list with the A's. And one of those teams has played a couple more games than the D-backs, too. All right, when we come back, the NFL draft is officially 1 week from today. So how are the Cardinals approaching it? We're going to go live to Cards headquarters for the Monty Austin Fort, Jonathan Gannon press conference. That's next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.